Welcome to The Ether. Today is Thursday, November 17th, 2022. Today on The Ether, the Inter-Protocol AMA, how to build in winter. It's like building in summer, but with more jackets. Let's take a listen.
How's everyone doing in the meantime? Zaki, how's it going?
It's going good. I mean, I'm excited to see all of these pieces, like, working together, you know, DEXs on Cosmos, Axelor bridging assets, IST being minted. Like, it's really cool.
Yeah, yes. I think Yusef of the Economic Committee was pointing out from the analytics dashboard. I was looking at the like 71% of ISTs on the interchain now, which is cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's really amazing. I believe, I think IST is also right now the biggest native stablecoin on the interchain.
Is it really? Where did you find that number?
USK is apparently about 300,000. I don't think Kava's stablecoin is used over IBC at all. And so in terms of a natively issued Cosmos stablecoin, I believe we're probably the largest and with the most presence over IBC.
Oh, that's awesome. It's almost a coincidence we have Axelor here.
Well, you guys are just getting started too, right? It's only been up for a couple of weeks. We're just getting the ball rolling, so it's super exciting.
Yeah. I mean, we're just at the... These are the earliest days, but I honestly think it's going extremely well. And none of this would be working without our partners in the bridges, right?
Yeah. I think. Yep. Yeah. That's both been a huge support and is part of the opportunity. Is there's multiple ways of bridging. We get this, you know, this nice connectivity to all these other systems, but users, you know, some people want to farm yield on that, but some people just want to pay or just want to use things. And so that makes for both the foundation and the opportunity.
Absolutely. So guys, I guess I'll kind of kick it off quickly. So I'm going to be moderating, have a couple of questions that I definitely want to dive into. And I think it's a really exciting topic of conversation and timely just in terms of all the things that have been happening in the market lately, you know, exciting to hopefully see a lot more people start to really just care about decentralization and why it's important, right? So I'll kick it off just with a quick intro, and then I think we can pass it around. I think, you know, Dean and Zaki, most people know you, but I think it would be helpful, and then we can kind of jump into it. So I'm Jake. I work at Axelor. I cover most of our Cosmos projects. So pretty much spend all day, every day talking to, you know, new chains and new projects coming into the Cosmos space. And it's definitely super, super exciting. And it's also really exciting to be having a conversation like this, just because native stablecoins are really going to grease the wheels of everything that we have going on within the interchain. And I think it's going to be really powerful. So that's me. I'll kick it over to you, Zaki, and then Dean, and we can kind of jump into some questions here.
Go ahead, Zaki. Well, Zaki needs no introduction. Oh no, go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, I'm on these calls. I've already been on these calls once per day. Zaki, work on Cosmos, helping get IST out the door. Yeah.
And IST in the door for all the consumers. So I'm Dean Tribble. I'm CEO of Agoric. Agoric builds the platform, the Cosmos-based chain to do smart contracts in hardened JavaScript, and IST is the first use case built on top of that. We also built much of the code of IST, though a lot of the designs and ideas came from outside and with sort of continuing sort of ongoing community participation. So that's what I do.
Awesome. And just a little, I guess, Axelar plug too, right? So Axelar is essentially a blockchain that connects blockchains. So right now we're moving a lot of the liquidity that's backing IST, including, you know, primarily USDC on Ethereum over into the Cosmos ecosystem in a secure fashion so that we can have this native interchain token. So with that being said, I think a first question that most of the listeners are probably curious about is why is IST different and why is it a big deal?
Well, I'll let Zaki start there because he does a great characterization.
Okay. why is IST different? Okay. So we have been, you know, so the stablecoins have been a huge topic of discussion in crypto since I got into the space. I remember, you know, starting with like Dan Larimer's work on BitShares and like trying to figure out how to make the stablecoin thing work. Maker has been an enormous breakthrough, but also USDC and Tether have been, you know, and it's like, arguably the strongest product market fit that has ever been found in cryptocurrency has been stablecoins and like in this public blockchain technology. So why is IST special? IST is special because so the key from my point of view to making the world's best stablecoin is the world's best stablecoin is the stablecoin that has the most possible ways to mint that stablecoin. And the problem with the reason why no one has sort of, no team has actually sort of won at this game of having the most possible ways to mint the stablecoin is because you have to safely compose a number of complex subsystems together in order to do that. And in the make, like if you ask the Maker team, like what has been the never-ending challenge, it's like anytime we introduce a new way of interacting with the core minting functionality of Maker, there is the possibility of introducing new vulnerabilities because of how the different parts of the system interact. And it's not like even like the properties of the like Agoric system, the like all of this like a secure compartmentalized JavaScript system sort of mitigate all possible problems because you still have to think about economic interactions, how leverage is going to interact with the system. Like there's a very large surface area. But what we have, I think somewhat uniquely in IST is we have like a lot of expertise in the economic committee. We have the Agoric runtime system. And we have the ability to now expand all of the different ways, like expand sort of over time and compose with the rest of Cosmos all possible ways of creating IST. And that is a substantial way of getting to essentially the biggest stablecoin in the world. And like a great example of that is the way Axelar and the IST minting system in its first iteration are composing.
Yeah, that composability is kind of is kind of the key. These separate components that safely compose, and in particular in the IST design, they separately compose with independent minting limits to make sure that you're doing a risk balanced portfolio of all of these different mechanisms by which you could mint stablecoin or stable token, and that's what lets us safely incorporate new mechanisms, old mechanisms, multiple different bridges, etc. Is to you know provide that you know is to provide that risk managed aggregation of them.
Awesome. So, what do you guys think that this like? What is the impact on the entire Cosmos ecosystem going to be from this? And like, kind of Atom in particular, but the ecosystem as a whole.
So the characterization I have for a stable token, right? You know, several thousand years ago, I think the Sumerians discovered that having a currency, you know, provided grease for the gears of commerce. You know, it's just more effective, a bit more efficient infrastructure for having a growing economy of multiple permissionless, independent things cooperating. The big thing that IST brings is being IBC native in that regard, where, you know, the sources of capital underpinning it can come from other chains invented by other people in a completely uncoordinated fashion. And then the IST can be brought from chain to chain. And so it really, should make it easier for use cases for end users that are not trying to juggle, you know, manage different bridge risks or different currency risks, what have you. They just want to, you know, buy an NFT or invest in a curve or whatever it is, in a stable swap. It provides that consolidation so that they've got a currency that can function across the interchain. So that's a big value in terms of enabling real interchain commerce to grow.
Right. Okay. I think that makes sense. Outside of what it's USD and UST right now that are able to use as collateral to mint IST, is there anything on the roadmap for other assets, or what does that look like moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. Right now, there's already a proposal to add DAI. So the deployed version right now, right, this is a multi-stage thing that we'll be adding and extending over time because we can and because that's required. So the deployed version, deployed IST right now focuses on, you know, having strong parity with the dollar and then enabling integration across the interchain. And so it is parity stability module only, where you can bring in selected dollar parity stable tokens and mint IST in exchange for them. And then they become, you know, protocol controlled value that you can go either way, right? So you can take IST and you can trade it in for USDC on Axelar or USDT on Gravity or what have you. And so that's the currently deployed system. There is a proposal to add DAI to that, and we'll come back to that in a little bit. But it's another strong parity stable token that has some exposure via USDC, but it also has some exposure via capital assets across the Ethereum ecosystem. So it starts to give us, you know, broader footprint of the backing, while still providing that core keep parity with a dollar as the first thing you can lean on. Then Q1 is planned the rollout of Vault directly in IST, so that you'd be able to, you know, community can determine which assets to use, but the obvious initial one would be Atom. So you could bring, for example, Atom across as collateral, lock it up in a vault, and mint IST against that. And that starts to free the capital value of all these interchain assets to be, you know, the next, you know, additional backing risk managed on a per collateral type basis for IST. But the proposal for DAI should, you know, I mean, that's being discussed in the econ committee. Yusuf, who's on the econ committee, talked about that at the IST community call earlier this morning, and that's been discussed already, and that'll be discussed in their econ committee as to how they'll manage the minting limits around that and so forth. So that ball is rolling in the community.
Okay, cool. So a growing number of assets that are going to be able to be used as collateral. Is it possible to like keep Atom staked and also like somehow have it in a vault where you would be able to mint IST off of? Or I guess we would be using then you know, something like Stride, and we'd be doing it off of a derivative of Atom, or like how are you guys thinking about that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's two possibilities of what could be feasible. One is assuming the Cosmos Hub adopts the liquid staking changes that Occlusion has been working on. You would be able to potentially have a system that directly interacts with like the liquid staking shares and interchain accounts, and doesn't use a derivative asset and is instead backed by staked atoms. Such an architecture would be possible. It would also be possible to use liquid staked derivatives of Atom, like from Stride or Quicksilver, to also interact with the system this way.
Okay.
Yeah, but just, and the interesting there are a couple of interesting things there. One is, of course, as I said, the community, the extensibility is critical here, and the community will get to decide which of those, you know, have enough, you know, weight to be worth doing. Critical on these things is going to be how do they get priced? When you're doing vaults, the question is how do they get priced so it knows when to liquidate and what to sell it for. And what's the market for sell for being able to do the liquidation? And if liquidation works, I mean, that is the basis for CDP, you know, style vaults, MakerDAO style vaults, to be robust and economically healthy and solvent and so forth. Now, what's interesting about things like liquid staking or things like LP positions that I know other people have expressed interest in is being able to use LP positions, for example, from Osmosis or Crescent or whatever things as collateral, is how you liquidate them might be different, and you need an extensible system that it supports interesting liquidation, right? If you've got an LP position, sort of like they do with superfluid staking, you could have the liquidation first, you know, redeem the LP for the underlying and then sell the underlying, or you know, depending on what market you might prefer to resell the LP position. So with liquid assets, similarly, does it redeem the underlying and sell the underlying? Does it resell the liquid staking token? And that'll kind of depend on the architecture there. And that's something that will evolve over time as the market for these things evolve.
Okay. That's really cool. How are you guys thinking about like composability within Cosmos? Is Agoric going to be the hub for where all of these tokens are minted? And then they're, you know, say you send, IST to say, and then want to bring it to Kujira. Are we still going to have like that path dependency problem where it's going to need to come back through Agoric, or is there anything from like a technical perspective that's going to allow everything to just be IST everywhere and we kind of won't run into that UI issue?
So there is a design, or like I've been working with the IBC team about a design to do what is called automatic path shortening. So this is a thing that we left out of the original IBC protocol spec because we felt like it would not, we would never ship IBC if we tried to do this in the initial launch spec. But you could actually have so right now, essentially, to a certain extent, we weave the path shortening to essentially the user, or in a probably a better world, the wallet. Could be doing this for the user automatically. It'd be like, oh, you were trying to get from, you bought IST on Crescent, now you want to use it on Stargaze. Like, I will automatically like know that I need to like route you to Agoric, and then from Agoric to Stargaze. But there, what I would say is that that it's possible at the IBC protocol layer for the IBC for relayers to detect, oh, I see that this object, like a token, is moving from Stargaze, from Osmosis to Stargaze, but Stargaze has a connection to Agoric, and Osmosis has a connection to Agoric. And just under the hood, I will just tell the Agoric chain, have Osmosis tell the Agoric chain, hey, I see that this object that you is moving to this third place, and that this and tell the Stargaze chain, hey, this object that you've gotten from the Osmosis chain can actually just be converted into an object from the Agoric chain. And relayers can actually do this.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the important things in the overall IBC ecosystem, right? So IST in some sense is just like any other token in a decentralized multi-chain ecosystem, suffers from the same, you know, routing problem, if you will. But one of the things that's critical about the IBC ecosystem is it surfaces that explicitly. There's a few other places that people have tried where they paper over it and they try and hide it, and then they do a bad job of solving it. By having it be surfaced, you know, by having made that decision to not, you know, magically paper over it at the IBC layer, then we really get to have multiple solutions and multiple directions of solutions that really address the security and network reliance issues that are critical to address depending on what nodes you're talking about, right? You know, if I'm taking IBC from you know, Osmosis to Crescent, that's great. Or bringing something from Axelar to Osmosis and then from there to Agoric, that's great. You know, we have, you know, we can rely on a lot of that being just fine. But the, you know, Interchain is permissionless. People will be standing up new nodes all the time that people haven't heard of, they don't rely on, they're not sure about. And you really want to have the infrastructure be able to you know, manage IST transactions across that without causing someone to unduly rely on a chain that they shouldn't have to rely on. And so, you know, IBC really does enable us to solve that problem in a way that puts you know, that really puts the Cosmos ecosystem, it's part of the reason why the Cosmos ecosystem is ahead of the rest of the world on interchain commerce and sort of what the next wave of this of DeFi and chain economics will be. I mean, that's part of why we're excited that IST is positioned to be, you know, key to that, and it will need to nicely solve and nicely motivate solving that problem from the user experience point of view to make it easy to move your IST from chain to chain. You know, if the answer is someone deploys modules that are actually doing underwriting of a certain amount of IST on a chain so it can pass from one to the other quickly without needing network round trips and all that sort of stuff, I mean, all that is doable and all that is completely transparent to the users and can provide them, you know, robust, secure transfers without you know, multiple network round trip overheads. So there's a lot of engineering that can be done there to make that really nice from a UX point of view.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It's just something that it comes up a lot on calls with me. I see it.
Uh-huh.
It's one of those things. I don't think it's really a problem now, but I foresee it. You know, it could just create a dicey UI in the future. And I guess like a follow up question to that. I know like IBC can definitely solve it. It's so powerful, right? Once you can send messages, you have you have true composability. You can pretty much do whatever you want. We just got to programmatically figure it out. Like where do you foresee within Cosmos that problem being solved? Is it like on the front end of applications on different chains? Is it within the wallet? Is it a combination? Like, how are you guys thinking about that?
I think it's a combination, you know, I mean, or rather, I think we will see multiple ways of solving that and it will settle out to some fairly natural usage solutions. So you want system level support so that people that are doing command line stuff or automated bot integration, they're not relying on a particular, you know, they're not relying on beautiful integration into Kepler to move this stuff and make it all seamless when you can't have that on you know, the five or six other wallets that roll out across the Cosmos ecosystem. Having that be something that, you know, there's already IBC protocols that are providing great, you know, that are providing the core underpinnings that everyone will be able to use to do that path shortening, for example. And then it's in the infrastructure.
Okay. Gotcha. Zachy, any comments on that or should we leave that one? I feel like that was solid.
I think that was end to end.
Okay. Cool. I guess question for you, Zachy, is like is Sommelier planning on using IST or is there anything? I know you got your hands in a lot of various Cosmos projects. Probably a little bit at all of them, actually. Is there like any use cases that you're particularly excited about for this?
I am, let's say, IST and SOM, not short-term, an obvious connection. Sommelier right now is more focused on like the EVM side of DeFi and IST is right now focused on the emerging Cosmos DeFi ecosystem, which has been a tricky challenge. The which has been a tricky challenge to figure out how to do. These worlds are today still somewhat separated, right? So there's an EVM DeFi ecosystem, there's a Cosmos DeFi ecosystem. They're like, both are growing, both are developing. Using Cosmos tech to improve and extend the like Ethereum and EVM DeFi ecosystem as its primary focus at the moment.
Okay, gotcha. What's next? How about is there any use cases for like do we foresee IST like becoming so big that it eventually starts moving outside of the Cosmos ecosystem? Or is, I know we got to kind of crawl, walk, run here, but
yeah, I mean it's certainly the crawl, walk, run, and you know I think you know. We had an initial phase that was really crawl, but maybe this is the crawl phase. And as we roll out vaults, it's the walk phase. But, you know, we're already talking about including DAI. We're already, you know, pulling USDC that is in some sense from outside. So we've got the inbound integration. But, you know, as we start to unlock the asset value of all these Cosmos tokens so that you can take your, you know, Osmo and Atom and Juno and whatever and mint IST against it, people are going to be able to bring that out and use it for other things. And while most of those things they can get in the Cosmos ecosystem, yeah, okay, there's some economy out there outside the Cosmos ecosystem, right? And so being able to bring it back across Axelar to participate, at the very least, you know, participate in yield activities that are outside of the Cosmos ecosystem. You guys are connected to mint too many of those. And I expect that there'll be plenty of people that want to do that.
For sure. What is your take? Like, is it possible that when I know that, you know, we have native USDC coming into the Cosmos, I'm sure that, you know, plenty of listeners are wondering how that might impact something like this. Mm-hmm. Is it possible that the Cosmos ecosystem just rejects native USDC and only wants to use IST? What are your thoughts on all that? I definitely think that fundamentally it sounds like IST is significantly better for mm-hmm. the Cosmos ecosystem just because mm-hmm. of the assets mm-hmm. That are going to be backing it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like everybody that's doing DeFi within the Cosmos ecosystem is pretty in love with Cosmos. So just wondering like what your thoughts on that and what your plans are around that.
So I'm excited. I mean, I know Zucky's had a lot more to do with getting native USDC than I, though I was involved early on. I'm excited about that, right? You know, it is critical if you want to have systems that bridge to mainstream use cases, that you bridge to mainstream economic pricing. That's why parity to a dollar is so convenient from an accounting and from a pricing and et cetera point of view is there are plenty of use cases where people want to be able to, you know, compare the price of their virtual sneakers with their real sneakers or whatever it is, right? Or, you know, buy tickets in multiple different venues. And so the parity with the dollar is critical. One of the main mechanisms you get for that is being able to just bring dollars in quickly. And USDC is one of those mechanisms to be able to bring dollars quickly, have something you can then arb against, you know, stuff that is directly dollar backed. You know, having that as a, you know, one of the pillars that we can lean on, whether it's USDC or Paxos or some other mechanism of that flavor, really helps with having, you know, tight parity, you know, from a pricing point of view. It doesn't, as you say, it doesn't displace IST at all, you know, because IST will have all the other ways you can mint that IST will have that USDC simply will not. It will have the ability to unlock the asset value that people have, you know, in Cosmos or in any asset that is connected via strong, you know, quality bridges from other chains. And so, you know, I think these coexist and support each other quite well.
For sure.
Want to add anything to that, Zucky?
No, I think that was perfect.
Okay, so like anything else you think in terms of IST that we didn't cover that's kind of on the roadmap that you think is important to bring up here that you guys are excited about?
Well, I'm excited about, you know, the implementation work going on for the next round of technology. I'm looking forward to, you know, so actually there's a couple of key changes from the white paper that are probably worth talking about or mentioning. So originally, part of the overall inter-protocol suite included a local AMM, which will eventually have a local AMM, but included a local AMM, and we already have code to do incremental liquidation against an AMM. But the market has changed quite a bit since that was originally done with both you know, multiple high-quality AMMs in Osmosis and Crescent and newer upcoming ones, multiple order books like, you know, Say, Injective, and others that are rolling stuff out. And you know, and so coming in to deploy an AMM with enough depth to be usable for liquidation, you know, that's sort of redundant. You know, people have succeeded at that well, and we should be able to leverage that liquidity if that makes sense. And so the biggest change in the short term from the white paper is instead of rolling out the AMM, we're going directly to vaults, where the key liquidation strategies will now be different in terms of having, you know, a direct liquidation market and possibly also doing liquidation over IBC to order books and AMMs on other chains, right? And so we'll be, you know, we're finishing the write-up of that. You know, the hardest part of any of these systems is getting that design right, the implementation with all the, you know, composable infrastructure and the pieces we already have and the reuse of components and all that. That should be pretty straightforward. But going through the design, you know, running it by, you know, experts at Osmosis, experts at Crescent, and, you know, Gauntlet, and all the people that we want to that we talk to get advice on this stuff, in order to be sure that we, you know, and doing the economic modeling to be sure that it has the right, you know, liquidation speed is critical. But I think it will make for a much more, you know, much richer overall decentralized economy across the interchain. So I'm really excited about that change, and that's one where, you know, having extensibility in the ways and means you can liquidate, being able to liquidate different currencies differently or different collaterals differently, all of those are going to be really useful and really important for the vault part of the system.
Yeah, that's really cool. And also, just like all of that wouldn't be possible without IBC, right? So it's interesting right. To see like different strategies that you guys are incorporating into the overall token that are really leveraging all of the amazing things about doing work in the Cosmos that you can't really get anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So that's it's very cool. All right. So I guess like just to kind of wrap up the IST aspect of this, where I think you guys have a pool on Osmosis right now and also Crescent. Is that right? Or am I missing a couple?
No, Crescent and Osmosis are live right now. We're IST is live on Osmosis Frontier, and it's live on the main Crescent interface.
Okay, nice. And are you guys Dean, is your team just working hard at pumping out IBC connections with all of the chains right now?
Mostly that's a community that does that. So we're supporting some people that are working on exactly those IBC connections. You know, we work with the validators that stand these things up. We work with Strangelove for some of the core backbone connections, like with you guys, like with Osmosis, like with Crescent. So a lot of that is going to be grown by those chains that want to incorporate IST, but we're definitely here to support making that happen. We've talked to a lot of chains and they're both excited about it and we're excited about them. I mean, you know, enabling cross-chain commerce is just the next big thing. I'm really excited to see that happen. So,
right. Is there, in terms of like distribution strategy, right? Like, wouldn't it be easier to just like have Agora connect to Cosmos Hub, which is then connected to all of the other chains? Like, what is the reason why, just in terms of getting like quick distribution everywhere, is it just like bridge risk in between like the Agora to like the Cosmos Hub, or why does nobody really go about it that way?
So it means that every transfer of assets is more complicated. So if the UIs end up finding it better to route through the Cosmos Hub, then great. But it does add latency. It does, you know, complicate the UI currently. And it means that, you know, regardless, you'll end up with IBC connections where you go, okay, I've now got two versions of this token. Which one is the collateral? That's one of those things where, as we start to sort out this shortening stuff, you know, versions of what you just described might make sense. But that's the nice thing is, you know, all of the inter protocol itself is agnostic to that. And now it's a question of what's the best sort of, you know, community infrastructure for adding new chains. I can imagine some chain does fit exactly what you described, where, you know, relayers right now, you know, the cost of doing relayers will go down. It'll get folded into validators, get folded into other services. Right now, relayers are an investment in order to make these connections happen. And, you know, at some point you start to get chains that are small enough, or if chains are using interchain security, it might make sense to do it the way you described. So, yeah, we'll just have to see. Those can coexist with direct links. And we focused on ones where, you know, the Agoric to Osmo, the Agoric to Crescent, the Agoric to Axelar, those are all such important, you know, high volume and eventually links, that having those be direct links made sense from the beginning, so that we're not changing denoms later.
Okay, awesome. How's everything going at Agoric? Like, I know this was, you know, the first big application that you guys were launching, but I'm super excited about the chain. What do you guys have going on over there?
I'm just so delighted that we've gotten this tech stack, you know, up and running and battle tested, you know, and getting some battle testing. So we are planning the next release that has things that are obviously both, you know, ISK, so, you know, the liquidation stuff or new liquidators, and then vaults as the key thing, vaults and reserve as the key thing to roll out. There's also infrastructure changes or infrastructure enhancements. So better, more support for upgradability, support for state sync, which our validators really want, and, you know, for good reason. So these are things that are critical elements for, you know, the applications in addition to IST that are building and have committed to deploy on the Agoric mainnet when it supports things beyond IST. So what we call mainnet 2, and then eventually the permissionless version in mainnet 3. And so we're doing a lot of shared infrastructure, all of which enhances IST, right? Performance improvements make PSM trades happen faster, but they're critical for vault trades happening, which are more interesting and complicated and have more user interaction. So these are all just elements to improve the platform and roll it out. But the difference between, you know, iterating on enhancements that can kind of go through a normal product management process of, here's the set of things, what's the priority, you know, based on our customers, you know, and our ISK targets and all that kind of stuff, that's so much more sort of familiar software engineering than the initial start where you're going, you know, green field, what's the first, you know, minimum viable product we can ship. So it is just wonderful to be sort of over that initial launch and have stuff out there. And as Zucky noted earlier, right, it's, you know, IST is growing out there in, you know, DCF rolled out incentives that are the foundation associated with the Agoric ecosystem, rolled out incentives on Crescent and shortly on Osmosis. And so that also, you know, is to help propel IST out into the world. They'll be looking at other DEXs and stable swaps as they become available. So there's a lot of moving parts. Go ahead.
The other big thing right now is really trying to find applications in the IST ecosystem, in the Cosmos ecosystem that now can start using IST, right? The first step is getting into the DEX ecosystem, because if we're not part of the DEX ecosystem, then no application will be interested in using IST. But that then becomes the beginning of the next piece, which is, you know, trying to get the application world inside of Cosmos. And, you know, the most popular applications inside of Cosmos today are still DEXs. So it's a little bit of a kind of a snake eating its own tail thing, where we're trying to get into the DEX ecosystem
to serve the Dext ecosystem, which is the most popular set of applications. And like, you know, to the extent that traders choose IST as an asset to use, that becomes important to the evolution of the ecosystem. But really what we want is IST to start showing up in apps beyond trading, and bootstrapping that and getting IST to be like sort of a preferred asset in that world is hugely important.
Great. And yeah, I mean, like we said before, right, we're still early. So I definitely envision that coming to fruition. And there's just so much action going on in Cosmos right now. There are so many new chains coming in and some bigger ecosystems that I think are going to start blowing up. Especially too, I feel like everybody's kind of pushing against the end of the year, right, for a lot of stuff to go live. So I envision kind of the first half of next year to be really exciting.
Yeah, I think another big push is just, you know, there's the traditional. It's always sort of interesting, you know. There's this tradition. Well, there's a tradition of kind of into the winter, people doing some more exploration of decentralized applications and like new stuff, and like, you know, active wallets on like things like Osmosis and Avalanche and Ethereum have been on the rise. To a certain extent, because of all of these, the sort of like meltdown of the centralized exchange ecosystem. So I think it's a great place to be live, when these things are happening.
Yeah. Yep. Yep.
I mean, speaking of that, right? How does everything that just happened over the past couple of weeks, like I just tried to reach out to Osmosis before this and see if there was some sort of spike in wallets or anything that were using them.
I believe I've seen stuff on Twitter about a spike in active wallets.
Okay. I mean, it makes sense. Like how do you guys see that? I'm just curious to hear like both of your takes on the entire thing, right? Like, did you see it coming? How do you think it's going to impact this? I think Sam's a complete shyster. What's your take?
Well, so, you know, I didn't see it coming, but I was mostly not paying attention to FTX because they were off in Solana land. But, you know, it is, I mean, the thing is, this is TradFi fraud done in TradFi style, the same way it's happened previously. The fact that it's a crypto brokerage is sort of uninteresting. It is the same kind of fraud for the same kinds of reasons, and and it's a good reason why you want much more auditable software running on high integrity infrastructure and much more decentralized, so no one's in a position to pull that kind of stuff, right? And so, you know, we are not directly affected by it, except for the industry, you know, being impacted, which is just terrible. Not just the industry, but also, of course, the users that were cut up by it. But but it's also a real good reason for us all to focus on building and, you know, things that are higher integrity, more decentralized, you know, more segregated risk, more visibility into the executive management of it, and that sort of thing.
For sure. I envision all of us are going to be sitting at the Thanksgiving table this year explaining to our families why decentralization is so important. It's something that we haven't had to do before.
I mean, I will just say my interaction, my experience with FTX is just like, look, I think financial innovation is great, but we have figured out how to do financial innovation on chain and in environments where this kind of fraud is impossible. And it is insane to me that we should ever go forward celebrating financial innovation. Like, you know, it's great that FTX, you know, we built a new way of doing cross margining that allows, and like we have created liquidity in exotic assets that, you know, it was hard for people to create liquidity. And we don't know at this point how much of that was real and how much of that was fraud. And it is just, to me, like we have built all of the infrastructure, all of the pieces exist today to do financial innovation in an environment in which theft and fraud are impossible. And so why would we not do
that? Right.
I agree. Well said. And I think it's actually interesting, some of the news that's come out since, right? Like even some of the bigger players have kind of acknowledged that, which I guess is a very small silver lining to so many people losing money.
But, I think the pain is just going to be, we're going to see how bad the pain really gets in this space. And I don't think like the level of pain in the industry is going to fully be understood until the level of pain in the industry is going to be fully understood until the level of pain in the industry is going to be fully understood until like early next year. Because I think like a lot of big institutions are having a lot of internal conversations right now. And we got to see how all of that shakes out.
Right.
I do think that the two silver linings are, it does appear that this is like specifically like there are two specific problems. One is that like the CeFi lending ecosystem has been an utter disaster of mismanagement. They have chased after lending to these Bitcoin miners. They have chased after lending to market makers. They have chased after like the sources of yield the sources of demand for loans. Every single one of them has turned out to be just like completely uncreditworthy, and the people who are operating these things have turned out to be unable. But on the other hand, people who have like even the like highest risk DeFi thing, the highest risk on-chain thing, but like the under-collateralized lend to market makers pools that run on Maple Protocol, they all seem to have done fine and like massively outperformed from a credit risk point of view any CeFi lender. And so it's just like it is to me. It's just like, yeah. I mean, I think arguably Luna was like probably the biggest setback for DeFi because it was a fully transparent system that everyone could see how flawed it is. Yet billions and billions of dollars poured into it, but you know it failed in a basically transparent way too. Whereas you know the Luna failure seems very connected to the FTX failure. But look how many months it took for us to understand what had happened.
Dean, did you have something there?
No, that pretty much covered it. I was just sort of thinking about that delay, since we know now that the Luna failure precipitated it sounds like that, you know, there was some non-trivial rot already in the controls, but the Luna failure precipitated more active misbehavior inside of FTX, and so this is part of the long tail of that. That was, you know, all the DeFi parts shook out quickly, and now we're looking at the CeFi parts that people can cover up for a while, right? So it's just contemplating that. You know, I really want to see. I really like the much more rapid correction and start to straighten stuff out.
For sure. And I think it's just about time that all these people get kind of shaken out of the industry. Yep. All right, last thing. I'm getting chirped because I didn't ask any Axlar questions. Classic. So Dean, just one for you. What are you most excited about just in terms of like the Agoric Axlar partnership? And then I think we can pass it off to questions from the crowd.
Well, so you know, having the ability to connect all these assets is great. And having the programmability, I'm a bit, you know, programmability is what Agoric's all about. And you guys are doing a good job of adding that to bridging. And so making it very easy to go from, you know, your assets on the ETH side of the world, bring them over and get IST, you know, the more we can make that smooth, the better off we all are. and you guys have some nice hooks for that. So you know, we've used some of them already. I'm expecting the community to come out with even more of them. And I love that stuff. I also, you know, similarly, you know, I really like the robust architecture you guys have. That makes it, and the fact that you stand behind it, that makes it a lot easier to incorporate and absorb some counterparty risk when the counterparties, you know, not only seem to be doing the right thing, but you'd actually see some of it on chain, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I also think just like generally kind of cool, like a lot of the lending and borrowing protocols are starting to just like, rather than move the assets from one chain or another, right? You can just send a message, lock them in a gateway contract on a different chain, mm-hmm. and then kind of take a loan out against them, right? So mm-hmm. I think that is probably going to open up some interesting opportunities to just be kind of taking, you know, leaving assets on Ethereum or, you know, Say or Aptos or whatever chain it is, right? And then more opportunities to mint IST and bring more commerce into Cosmos, which will be great. Okay, awesome. Well, I don't know how we do community questions, but I think somebody on the call can probably look into that for us.
Yeah, you know, I'll help you. I'll handle that. Yeah, just raise your hand. Let's see. Yeah, if you have a question, just request to speak. It's easier that way than seeing emojis.
Wait, I have a question for like Chris, who's there, or Joe Clark. What did they decide in the econ committee meeting?
Oh, Chris, give me a wave if I can bring you up here.
But I'll say something while you're doing that around the Axelar thing. You know, the fact that Axelar stands behind, you know, behind the bridging and has assets to help, you know, offset counterparty risk, that we've seen reflected in the minting limits for bridged assets, right? I mean, you know, bridges, you know, normal bridges have been one of the highest risk elements in these multi-chain ecosystems. Obviously, IBC is dramatically safer than that. But if you've got to have a bridge, having it be a chain is clearly a win. You know, in part because you've got, you know, the trust is much more broadly spread, but in part because you have the assets to back it up. So now hand it to you, Chris.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. So very quickly, I'm Chris Berg. I'm part of the Econ Committee and have been an Agoric advisor for some years now. So we the Economic Committee, as I think Yusuf would have covered in the Agoric, in the inter-community call, we meet once a week, and we literally just met about an hour or two ago. And the main focus of our conversation was just, I mean, we've got to keep a track of the market disruptions and what that does for particularly USDC and USDT, and trying to understand what the nature of the risks are relative to, well, you know, what do bridge risks look like relative to what do the different reputations of Tether and Circle assets look like as well. To answer your question, Dean, directly, we're at the status quo. We're not proposing to change any of the parameters at the moment, but we've got a very high, we're mounting a very close watch on how things are moving around. We're pretty happy with where it's going. It's growing. The IST is growing. It doubled in the last week or so. In the amount of IST minted doubled in the last week, which was exciting. It's nowhere near the total mint limit of $5 million. It's about $950,000, which is good. So the sort of modest paced growth is exactly what we were hoping to see, because that allows us to keep a very close eye on it in these early days.
Cool. Thank you. Back to you, Jake. Does someone have a question?
I haven't seen any requests yet.
Okay, good.
Nice. All right. Well, I guess we can wrap it up then, guys. Thank you so much for the time. Everybody go buy yourself some IST and start greasing the wheels of the Cosmos ecosystem and get on Crescent and Osmosis, or go and get into some pools in there. And hopefully we can reconnect in a couple months and see all the progress that's been made.
Absolutely. If you have a zone with the retail use case, or with the use case for IST beyond just an AMM, you know, those are, as Zucky said earlier, Those are pretty high priority. So let's get that going.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much, everybody. Have an awesome afternoon. Happy holiday season, I guess we're getting into.
Thank you for having us. Ciao.
Thanks for checking out another episode of the Ether. That was the Inter-Protocol AMA, How to Build in Winter, recorded on Thursday, November 17th, 2022. For TerraSpaces.org, I'm Finn. Thanks for listening. If you want to keep listening, head on over to TerraSpaces.org/donate and show some support. Now with Spark IBC enabled. Go Joe.
Put your hands up like you got a couple questions. Ain't no misdirection, just a bunch of flexing. All aggressive, insane from all directions. Smoke rolls in when I start a session. Blank canvas, blaze up the handlers. Rocking back and forth like I got the van stuck. Don't grind the clutch, mind you hush. Put your mask on and don't touch the antlers. Feeling untouchable when I'm on the verse. But in the universe, I'm just writing some words. Enticing these nerds while I'm laying out my memoirs. Like, remember when I had to fight the centaur? I'm a book nerd, let me take you on the journey. Lost in the labyrinth, searching out the lost fern. For certain, got the taxes included. Acting like a writer, never felt secluded. Shit and line them up. Just another fixed game of try my luck. Go lighten up, dog. It could always be worse. Unless you're in the back of a hearse, then you're dead or putting in new speakers. It's a toss up, driver or just tweakers. Don't stress, yo. I've done the research. Living life like a bunch of fucking lemurs. It's a remake off the cutting floor. We take a little bit of poison and put it in the cheesecake. Tastes great, less filling, less stress, more killing. As he blew the cornerstone out the building and the blocks came tumbling down all humble. Feels like we're drowning in a little puddle. Rebuttal, I should be taking off in the shuttle. Getting high in space with the Hubble.
Terra Spaces.